It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, it's Food Friday. A cookbook author and food blogger helps us get ready for the school year with some easy back-to-school dinners. First, when was the last time you had to get new wireless headphones? You might carry a cell phone around with you. How long ago did you replace that? Chances are they probably lasted for a couple few years, maybe five at best. Our next guest says that's because that's how a lot of them are designed to work. He's looked into the hidden death dates in the electronics we use all the time and why it can be hard or impossible to make those products last longer, even if you want to. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you feel like your technology devices, your gadgets don't last as long as they should? Were you surprised when the battery stopped accepting a charge like it used to could? Do you think they should be built to last longer or make it easier or even possible to replace those batteries? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page if you have a device with power to do that. Jeffrey Fowler is the Washington Post technology columnist. Jeffrey, welcome back to Central Time.
Hello, hello.
What made you want to look under the hood on so many of these gadgets and figure out what was going on? They're incept dates, as they say in Blade Runner.
Indeed. So like millions of other Americans, I have a pair of Apple AirPods. And one day they started doing this thing where they went, anybody with AirPods knows the moment. That means that they're running out of power. And I noticed that it would, you know, it used to be that it would take, I don't know, a couple hours of using them to get to that moment. But, you know, at a certain point, I could just put them in my ears for like 15 minutes and I'd get to the doo-doo-doo. And that meant the battery was dying. So I said, okay, fine. My office is near an Apple store. I walked to the Apple store. I said, hi, I'd like to replace the batteries in these. They were only about 2 years old. And the Apple store said, sorry, we can't help you. We can't replace the batteries in these either, but we can sell you some new AirPods.
Aha.
And I said, I see how this works. It turns out that AirPods are not the only product that millions of Americans use that were designed to essentially become trash over time. And as a consumer advocate, as a columnist for the Washington Post, that makes me kind of annoyed. That kind of makes me mad. It's bad for our wallets. And you know what? It's also, it turns out, really bad for the environment.
Now, there's two key things going on here. Now, a rechargeable battery, it is over time going to lose its rechargeability.
Yes.
But I'm not technically proficient. I have successfully changed batteries in many products in my lifetime. These products you write, and many of them are designed so it's almost impossible to change a battery yourself.
Yes, exactly right. So look, it is the nature of the laws of physics that these lithium batteries that are rechargeable only can be recharged a certain number of times. That's known as the cycle count. And they're all born with a cycle count. And after you burn through it, they just aren't good anymore. What isn't up to the law of physics is what happens to these devices after the batteries wear out. They could be designed so that you pop open the back, put in a new one, and go on about your merry way. The problem is the electronics industry has, for the last 10, 15 years, been increasingly sealing these batteries inside products. In the case of those AirPods, the little tiny batteries in them are literally glued in to the sticks at the end. I mean, I actually, because I'm kind of crazy and it's my job to be a little crazy, I actually tried to open them up. I got like the world's tiniest little scalpel, like I was doing brain surgery, and tried to get the battery out. And it was insane. There was no way anybody was ever going to get those out because they were stuck in there with so much glue. And my question is, why are they designing these products this way? That's essentially forcing us to keep upgrading.
Now, you reached out to a bunch of companies and you looked at a lot of their products. You didn't hear back from a lot of them. Did anybody offer a justification that says, yeah, we need to glue these batteries in because what?
Yeah. I mean, so yes, I took a good 14 or so of the gadgets that I own with batteries, and I tried to figure out what is the death date in each of them. And to do that, I tried to get that cycle count number and then ask them, you know, hey, how can I replace the battery when this is done? As you said, many of them did not either answer my questions or gave me kind of like word salad answers instead of real answers. Some of them tried to defend the practice. And the most common defense I heard was, oh, well, these have to be sealed inside so they can operate in wet environments. Heard that from Philips, the electronic toothbrush, the Sonicare maker. Or that, you know, our devices are so tiny that they, you know, that this is the only way to put them in. But you know what? Pardon the pun here, but that argument does not hold water. And I'll give you an example of how it doesn't. One of the most popular makers of cameras in the world is called GoPro. They make those little action cameras that you see like surfers use. Well, guess what? They're used by surfers, so they can literally go for a swim. And yet every one of them has a battery that can be popped open. You can take it out, stick in a new one, and go on about your merry business. And so it is possible to design devices so that we can take the batteries out. It's just more trouble. And it just means that they have to maybe be a millimeter thicker. And the electronics industry just has not had the incentives to do that for us.
We're talking to Jeffrey Fowler, Washington Post technology columnist, looking at death dates for a lot of our electronic gadgets, a lot of things that are scheduled to become obsolete because their batteries are going to die and they're designed so you can't replace the battery. He tested a whole bunch of different ones. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a gadget that isn't recharging anymore? Do you wish you could replace the battery? Do you have questions for our guest about his research? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Melissa is with us now in Dubuque. Melissa, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So I have one that it's not battery related. It was an update that forced my tablet to just stop working properly. And it was like forced through. So
how old was the, it was a tablet you said? How old was it?
Yeah, it was maybe 2 years old. So it wasn't that old. I took good care of it. It had a case. I don't remember ever dropping it. So, and it was just that one update that got forced through one night. The next day, it did not work right. The keyboard wouldn't open up. Apps weren't running properly. And so I pretty much just had to replace it.
Melissa, thanks for the call. I feel like I've encountered this over the years. This is a different problem. Jeffrey, have you seen this kind of thing?
Yeah, I'd be really curious to know from Melissa what the brand was of that tablet.
Are you still there, Melissa?
Yeah. Can I say it on?
You can. Sure.
It was a Google Nexus.
Okay. Google Nexus.
Yeah, very interesting. So look, software updates are another way that that companies try to force obsolescence onto these products. Now, some of it is necessary. They're constantly discovering new security bugs and problems with devices. And so it is, you know, good for everybody to, when they offer a software update, to take it. The problem is, how long do they continue to support older devices? And Google's Android devices have been a little notorious on this front for not supporting older hardware. 2 years is a really short window. Mm-hmm. Normally we're talking more like three or four or even five. So another thing that we the users ought to demand from these companies is that they continue to provide a software update and security patch support for these products for at least 5, maybe is it too much to ask for 10 years? Come on, guys.
Melissa, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Now, you, as you mentioned, tested a bunch of different items, got to their long-term recharge life. Were there particularly egregious ones, you thought, Jeffrey, ones that you were particularly offended by their lifespan and unreplaceability of their batteries?
Yeah, you know what? I went around and around in circles with Philips, the Sonicare toothbrush maker. So here's a product that, like, more Americans have electric toothbrushes than have iPhones. So these things are really common, but it is pretty hard to find ones that are, you know, these big brand names like the Sonicare that don't have this battery completely sealed inside. And I asked, Philips, okay, what can these things take? And they said, oh, about 200 or 300. I was like, that's a very small number of times you can recharge it. And they said, oh, well, you know, it'll last up to 12 years if you only charge it once every 3 weeks. But who does that? I mean, most people I know, maybe I'm strange, but most people put the thing back in the charger every night. And so, you know, I've not had a Philips Sonicare toothbrush that's lasted me more than a couple of years ever. So I just think that they, you know, and it's particularly ironic coming from Philips. You know, they're a European company, and Europeans take their environmental commitments much more seriously in general than American companies do. But here's a company that, you know, has been, you know, making these sealed in batteries for years. I'll give you an example of how silly the design of the Sonicare is. So it's very dangerous to throw away a product, put in the trash, a product with a lithium battery in it, because it can explode if it gets punctured or bent or something. So they actually had to include instructions with the Sonicare that if you ever want to recycle or throw away your Sonicare toothbrush, officially, you're supposed to take a hammer to the back of it and then put it in a vise and try to yank out this battery, which has been soldered inside with metal. It's just absolutely insane. Why would you design a product that's supposed to be used by hundreds of millions of people that way? It makes no sense.
We're talking to Jeffrey Fowler, technology columnist at the Washington Post, about his Gadget Graveyard, a project looking at how long many of our electronic devices last, why it's hard to make them last longer. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you felt money like you wasted money having to replace a whole thing when you should have been able just to replace the battery? Have you tried to extend the life of a cell phone or tablet or electronic toothbrush or you name it when it gets old instead of getting that new one? Call 800-642-1234. Should we have more access to repair these things too? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation about the hidden death dates in our cell phones, laptops, our electric toothbrushes. Jeffrey Fowler has been looking into this. He's the Washington Post technology columnist, and you can join in with a gadget story at 800-642-1234. Have you been frustrated by having to replace a gadget of some sort because the battery stopped recharging and wondered why you couldn't replace the battery? Our guest wondered that too, and he looked into it. You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Back to your calls now. Gary is with us in Wisconsin Rapids. Gary, hi.
Hi. Hi. Years ago, I had some chargers for batteries for like electric drills and things like that, DeWalt, and I forgot, there's a couple others. Anyway, I took it to a little repair shop in Marshfield, and the owner of the shop said, there's a special screwdriver. It looked like a Phillips head, but it has a little, not a wire, but a little, I can't figure it out.
The gist is you could, if you cheated a little bit, you could make a repair, Gary?
Right, right. You could unscrew the screws that held the charger together. And I did that. And when we got inside of the battery, there's a little tiny fuse, a little round fuse. It's got metal on each end and glass.
I gotcha, Gary. Gary, thanks a lot for calling in. So, Jeffrey, it's frustrating. Like, even when there is a solution, you kind of have to cheat and figure out workarounds to fix something like Gary's drills.
But you know what? I love the spirit of what Gary has to say here, because honestly, is there anything more American than being able to open up and tinker with the stuff that you own, right? I mean, like, people do this with their cars. We used to do it with our radios and our televisions and all kinds of stuff. But part of what the electronics industry has done over the last, again, you know, 10 to 20 years is make it seem almost forbidden to open up our stuff and make repairs on our own, or even take it to a local shop to have it repaired. And again, this is an intentional strategy on their part, because they either want to control the repair themselves so that you pay them more money, or they just want to keep you from repairing it so they go get you to buy something new. And I think that is bad for consumers and it is bad for the environment.
Thanks for that call, Gary. I want to ask Jeffrey, before we go back to our callers, I asked for sort of a worst of the worst. Are there companies, you mentioned GoPro is one, are there other companies or products where you thought, yeah, this is how it should be?
Yeah, you know, some of the big names have gotten a little bit better. So let's take the iPhone, for example, from Apple. So as I said earlier, Apple did a real number on us with the AirPods. But with the iPhone, it has learned the lesson. And now if you have a battery in an iPhone that is no longer very good, you can take it to Apple. You can take it to a store, you can mail it to them, and for $69, they will replace the battery in it. And that could give your iPhone another 3 years of life. And I think that is really good. And that should be, you know, basically every company ought to have some kind of service option or plan like that. But unfortunately, they don't.
Let's go back to our callers now. Jack is with us in Spring Grove. Jack, hi.
Hi, how are you doing? You know, I work from home now, especially during the pandemic, and I keep my my so-called mission critical laptop in a metal case when I'm not using it because we have cats that get into things. When I'm listening to you guys online or whatever, I use an older laptop that is just kind of wasted one. And I had this this Acer Cloudbook. It was a very thin, very light thing with a very big screen. It was originally designed mostly for schools to use, and I took off the Windows operating system because it wouldn't work anymore. It was too underpowered, and stuck on a Linux operating system, and it worked just fine. It used to have a battery capacity that would go 10 hours because it had a big, long battery someplace underneath the keyboard. And eventually, of course, it began slowing down, and now it doesn't hold the charge at all. And it is literally impossible to, number one, open the thing up without ruining the case, and number two, if you were to get it open and didn't mind duct taping it back together or something, you can't find a battery for it. It's a battery that is as wide as the laptop is and very, very thin. And it's a shame because this thing ended up in a landfill. And that's my one beef. And I could talk about how expensive digital cameras are lower resolution, and they're only worth $20 now when they were 1,200 10 years ago. But that's a whole other topic.
Jack, thanks a lot for the call. Jack worried, and you are too, Jeffrey, about, you know, these things ending up in landfills. A lot more waste than we, strictly speaking, we need to have.
Yeah, such a really good point. Jack, if you haven't yet, check out a repair community online called iFixit. That's where people with gadgets who are, into the idea of opening them up post advice for each other and instructions. They even sell some replacement parts, so there may be a chance that they have some instructions or even that battery that you need there. Another thing that is just on the verge of happening in the U.S. that is good news for people like you and me is that in the state of New York, the legislature just passed a law that would give us the right to repair our devices. And what that means is that companies would have to begin publishing instructions for how to open that laptop up and get the battery out, and also sell replacement parts. So maybe you could get that battery. So things are moving in the right direction on that front.
Jack, thanks a lot for that call. We're looking at the life and death of a lot of our electronic gadgets. Jeffrey Fowler is with us from the Washington Post. Back to your calls now. Bob is with us in Prairie du Chien. Bob, hi.
Hey, I got two, actually. Cell phones are one of them. It's like every 3 years, it's like the batteries start running out, the memories start running out, and it's like time to replace. And also hearing aids. It's unreal. A friend of mine has a daughter that has hearing aids. She's all the way through school, and it's like every 2-3 years, they have to replace them, and it's very expensive.
Bob, thanks for the call. Now, I know they're going over-the-counter hearing aids now. That could be a big change. But, Jeffrey, that's a key product for a lot of people, a hearing aid. I don't know. They are expensive right now to replace.
Yeah, I'm surprised to hear that a medical device didn't have a replaceable battery. I know, with other ear devices like those AirPods, there's been the argument that they needed to seal it in there to make it fit in a small space. However, there is another good counterexample to that. Samsung makes some totally wireless earbuds that compete with the Apple's AirPods, and the Samsung ones you can pop open and get the battery out. So it is possible to do even in very small spaces. And, in Europe, they're actually considering now laws that would require the makers, the companies making this stuff, to make the batteries accessible and removable. So, if these companies won't do it on their own, at least the Europeans might force them to.
Thanks for that call. Bill joins us now in Madison. Bill, hi.
Hi. A great one, coming from a family where you always try to fix stuff first. My brother Jim owns a house on the west side and has a Sears garage door opener put in when the house was built in '64. And the remote control wasn't working. So he took it apart and was just sitting at the kitchen table with a screwdriver. It was solid state, trying to move a couple wires. And then all of a sudden, boom, the garage door's working. And he just put it back together, and ever since then. And then same thing with the motor in there. It was something just tinkering around up in there. and he's got it all. It's been fine. And so it's the same entire, it's the same opener, same remote control since 64.
Wow. And knocking on the door of 60 years old there, Bill. Is there something to, they don't make it like they used to, Jeffrey, in the way they design these things?
I think so. Nothing makes me happier than hearing stories like this. I mean, how awesome does it feel when you're able to fix something on your own? You know, do it with some kids. Do it, you know, like everybody should, we should change our relationship with these products in our lives. We've allowed companies to make us think that the only thing we can do is spend more money with them. And, you know, that's really not good for us or for ultimately for the economy or for the environment. I know we haven't talked too much about that yet, but like if the alternative is throwing this away, sticking it in a landfill, you know, every time we buy something new, we are making another huge hit on our climate crisis, right? Every new laptop puts a couple hundred more pounds of carbon into the air. And, you know, that is just not sustainable for our planet, even if these companies want it for their quarterly earnings.
Jeffrey, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
You bet.
That's Jeffrey Fowler, technology columnist for The Washington Post. He was with us today to talk about his look at the hidden death dates in the electronics we use every day and what it would take for companies to make their products last longer. You could follow his reporting, see which devices are designed to die or designed to be repaired. Follow his reporting at The Washington Post. And if you still have a story to share with us, you can do that over on the Ideas Network Facebook page or email ideas@WPR.org. Now it's Food Friday. With back-to-school time getting closer, it might mean the start of more late-night dinners as kids get back from sports practice or extracurriculars. So what can you cook when you're on the clock? Our next guest is here with some easy, healthy, and delicious dinners for those school nights, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a go-to dish or kind of meal to make on that busy school night? Do you have a family favorite meal? To avoid the dishes, do you have a one-pot or one-bowl meal that you like the most? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Aaron Clark is the creator of the recipe website wellplated.com and the author of the Well-Plated Cookbook, Fast Healthy Recipes You'll Want to Eat. Aaron, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Now, let's set the scene a little more. I've been there. You know, I get home from work. The kids are just getting home from practice or whatever. I would ideally like to have a meal that they can eat before they're in bed. This is a serious challenge for family cooks, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's a challenge. I think the question of what should we have for dinner is always on everyone's mind. And it's a question that you have to answer every single night.
Yep. Now, let's look at some different categories. One of my solutions, and you're a fan too, is the slow cooker. A little advanced preparation, obviously. Can you talk about the role of the slow cooker in answering that what's for dinner question?
Absolutely. The slow cooker is just such an effective tool because it gives you flexibility. At the end of, I don't know about you, but at the end of the long day, when I come home, the last thing that I want to do is cook. You're tired, and that is a moment where you might be really tempted to turn to takeout or a frozen pizza. But if you've done the work earlier in the day with the slow cooker, it's almost like you are your own personal chef because you just get to come home, smell that wonderful dinner ready for you. I know that this is a favorite of my sister's too. She has four little girls, and so really the only time she ever has to herself is when they're napping. So the slow cooker lets her get everything ready for their dinner in advance. And then when the kids wake up, she can be there and not have to stress about dinner.
Well, the thing, I don't mind the cooking at that stage. It's the thinking. And that's having something in the slow cooker. You've done the thinking in advance.
Yes.
Now you gave us a recipe. You gave us a few recipes. One of them uses a slow cooker. People can find this at WPR.org/Food Friday. And this sounds awesome. A slow cooker honey pulled pork. Tell us about this.
Yes, you really, when you are looking for a total crowd pleaser, as well as when you're looking for a meal that will really stretch your dollar, especially right now with grocery prices where they are, it is really hard to beat a pork shoulder or pork butt. The terms are used pretty interchangeably. And if you make a big slow cooker of pulled pork, you actually can, it's pretty much impossible to overcook it. So you can start it the morning of, it yields a whole bunch. It's not too expensive per pound. And the ways that you can use it just go on and on. You can make, we love to make sandwiches with some coleslaw on top. It actually makes a really delicious pulled pork quesadilla. if you're in a big hurry, one of my favorites that is really nutritious and just a no-brainer is to put it on top of a baked potato or a baked sweet potato, add some cheese, some chopped green onion, and it is just so, so tasty. And if you, you know, this is great if you have a big household or a party of people you're trying to serve, or like for me, we just have a household of two, but I love it because I can portion it and freeze it. And then just in the morning, all I have to do is pull out a container. Boom, dinner is good to go.
You mentioned there's a couple things I want to follow up on the slow cooker honey pulled pork. First of all, you mentioned a couple cuts that you use. And that made me realize, reading this one earlier, something that went wrong, a bad pulled pork. I mean, it wasn't terrible. It wasn't great. I used a pork tenderloin. You say don't use a pork tenderloin for pulled pork.
No, pork tenderloin. I mean, don't get me wrong. Pork tenderloin is absolutely delicious. It is actually, it's great for fast dinners because you can, it only takes about 15 minutes to cook it in the grill or in the oven or the air fryer. However, it is a very lean cut. And what lean cuts respond well to is kind of that quick and dirty, high temperature cook time, get them done before they have a chance to dry out. A cut of pork like pork shoulder, or for example, a beef equivalent would be chuck roast, which is really popular for pork roast. It's a really tough cut of meat with just a lot of fat in it. And if you were to just try to cook it right away, it would not taste good. But that low, slow cooking really draws out, like breaks down the fibers, breaks down that fat, and makes it this really luscious cut of meat. Pork tenderloin doesn't have any fat to render. So instead of ending up with this juicy tender pork, you end up with, unfortunately, a hockey puck.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you also like to make your own homemade barbecue sauce for this recipe. Why do you like to do that as opposed to the store-bought?
Definitely. So, and if, I think it's pretty common for all of us, you know, we're all, when you're trying to think about ways that you can just eat a little better and some small tweaks that you can make, a really big lesson that I have learned is just the amount of sugar that is in a variety of different store-bought products. And a big place where it hides is tomato-based products like barbecue sauce, and ketchup is another big one, but particularly barbecue sauce. And I have found that I can create the same amazing flavor just using tomato paste, a little bit of pure maple syrup, which is a more natural sweetener, and it tastes just smoky and delicious, and some spices. So there's just some, there's not only is it better for you, but there's just this immense satisfaction in knowing that you've created something from scratch. You know exactly what's in it. And also, it's just absolutely delicious.
It's Food Friday. We're talking to Aaron Clark, creator of WellPlated.com, zillions of recipes there, author of the book, The Well-Plated Cookbook. She is helping us get ready for the school year, meals that are fast, easy to prepare on that limited amount of time between school, after school, and bedtime. You could join in if you have a question, if you are staring at this dilemma over the next few weeks, or if you found great solutions, if you have a family favorite that's easy to make, the kids love it. Hopefully you like it too. 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. Okay, Aaron, another recipe you got for us. Egg roll. Oh, that sounds fussy. Wait, egg roll in a bowl. So it's a deconstructed egg roll. Tell us about it.
Absolutely. So, I mean, who doesn't love egg rolls? Ever since I was a little girl and we were begging my mom to pick up takeout, we always, always, always had to include an order of egg rolls. But making an egg roll, while delicious, is kind of fussy. You need to make the filling, and then you have to stuff and form the egg roll. And then egg rolls are actually deep fried. There's a reason that we enjoy them as an appetizer. Well, I've discovered that you can take that same yummy filling with the ground beef, the shredded vegetables, and turn it into a fast 30-minute dinner. So it is a deconstructed, I call it egg roll in a bowl because it's kind of a deconstructive egg roll. You serve it over rice. And then what makes this recipe really, really fast is a bag of store-bought broccoli coleslaw. Chopping vegetables, you know, when you're trying to eat healthy and eat vegetables, the fact is chopping vegetables takes time, and it's hard to find a workaround for that. But I find that broccoli slaw, which is just shredded cabbage, broccoli, a whole bunch of other veggies, it's amazing for throwing into stir fries because it takes zero prep. It softens and the taste becomes really mild, so kids don't mind it either. And I don't have to do anything other than open the bag.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Dwayne is with us in Wausau. Hi, Dwayne.
Hey, good afternoon. So there's this, you know, it's chicken peppercini, or it was called like Mississippi chicken. I like using boneless, skinless chicken thighs and breasts. Thighs give it a little better flavor. And then you just dump in those jars of either banana peppers in the brine, put the juice and everything in with the chicken, some ranch, seasoning packets, one or two of those, and a little couple pats of butter, and 6 hours on, 7 hours on low or whatever. And man, you shred it up, and you can also use hotter peppers like the Giardiniera. I'm pronouncing that, but the chicken pepperoni is a good easy. And you put it on buns or with mashed potatoes or rice.
And that's when you're doing, like you said, in the slow cooker, Dwayne. Crock pot. Yeah. Dwayne,
one
thanks.
One time I said, you do it at 6 hours on high in the microwave, and the lady goes, 6 hours in a microwave?
Yeah, that would be a vaporized chicken. Dwayne, thanks a lot for sharing that. Yeah, I mean, you can get really fancy with crock pots, Aaron, or, and I've done this, I put in some chicken and some salsa and, you know, maybe a little spices. There are options to do things. It sounds like this chicken peppercini is pretty quick to pull together in the morning.
Yeah, it sounds fantastic. I've done that with the with Italian beef, where you use the jar of Giardiniera, do you pronounce that? That's a really good trick too, but I've never tried it with chicken. That sounds fantastic.
Thanks a lot for sharing that with us, Dwayne. We are talking to Aaron Clark on this week's edition of Food Friday. Aaron's the creator of the recipe website, wellplated.com, author of the book, The Well-Plated Cookbook, Fast, Healthy Recipes You'll Want to Eat. Aaron's with us to talk about how we can make back-to-school dinners that are quick, easy, healthy, and that people will want to eat, including young people. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a go-to where you keep the ingredients ready all the time for when you need that quick dinner? Tell us about it. Or if you have a question, if you need some advice from Aaron, you can call in too. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Aaron Clark, cookbook author, founder of the cooking site WellPlated.com, talking to us about how we can make easy and delicious dinners for the back-to-school season when we are often on the clock. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a go-to meal for this scenario? Do you have a question for our guest? Call in at 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Cyril is with us in Madison. Cyril, hi.
Hi there. Glad to have this subject for a discussion. I grew up with a stay-at-home mom, and we basically ate whatever was prepared for us, and that was that. My kids, I've been a stay-at-home dad for a lot of years, and it was my duty to prepare the food. And a lot of times, even though I know what they like, I would prepare something, and they'd come from school or wherever at the end of the day, and I'd tell them what I'd made, and I'd hear, I'm not hungry for that, or, I wanted something different, or even my wife would come home from work and say, we had a smorgasbord at lunch, and I just don't have room for any of this stuff, so I end up with 3 days of leftovers, which mostly I eat because nobody else will.
Sorry, man. I've been there. That's the worst. Yeah, when nobody wants to eat what you've cooked. I think you pay for cooking lessons for those kids, and they can pull together their own meal. But do you have thoughts, Aaron? You know, sometimes I would do something like, you know, a variety, like a salami platter with cold vegetables, or I call it a relish tray or whatever you want, like something where you can kind of have a variety of stuff to pick out of to help preempt that fussiness. Any thoughts on ways to tackle that?
You know, that is really hard, and I'm sorry that you're going through that. I know it's a thing that happens to everyone, and it's just I hate it when I spend time on a meal and someone's like, no, that wasn't what I was in the mood for. I totally get wanting to say like, you can just make your own dinner then.
Oh yeah.
Which was probably what my mom would have said to us, to be honest.
Same.
With you. But I love that idea of kind of making it an assemble your own. I think there's a lot of fun things that you can do with that just get kids feeling a little more involved. And so something really fun to do could be a make your own baked potato bar, where you have a pot of chili, just some different toppings for the potato. Then if someone's really hungry, they want to put that hearty chili on top, they can. If your wife, for example, isn't super full, she might just want, you know, a handful of cheese. You even can add roasted broccoli to it to get another veggie in there. And then what is kind of nice about the different components too is that if at the end people don't end up eating it, you can still have different options for ways to reheat the leftovers. Mm. So for example, if you did chili, you could do chili the next night with some toppings. You could do a chili dog. You could have the potatoes left over to enjoy as a side or as mashed potatoes. Just, I completely understand wanting to make the most of your efforts. And I just want to say that that's so commendable that you're doing that for your family.
Yeah. And think, Cyril, taco bar, sandwich bar, wrap bar, like, so, oh, I'm fussy about that ingredient, but I'll eat this other stuff. Maybe, I don't know, maybe that'll help. I don't know.
Make your own pizza is a fun one. Yeah. And then you can just keep the dough in the fridge. If people want pizza, you make the pizza. If they don't, they can fend for themselves.
Yeah. Or flatbreads. Don't even need to make a dough.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for that call. Thanks for that call, Cyril, at 800-642-1234. Krista is with us now in Mequon. Krista, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your selection? What's your go-to option, Krista?
Oh, well, recently I've just been doing these. It's called a sheet pan quesadilla, and it's fun to get the kids involved helping to make it, and it doesn't take very long at all if you want to do a hamburger or chicken or even a vegetarian option. I just saute up the red peppers or green peppers, whatever kind of peppers you want, and onions, and you can even use leftover chicken in this, which I've used, or you can fry up some hamburger, but you basically fan out the flour tortillas in a cookie sheet pan and fill the cookie sheet pan up with your protein and your vegetables and black beans and cheese, and then it's fun for the kids to fold it all up. You're kind of folding it up like a present, and then you put another sheet pan on top of it, and you put it in like a 375 degree oven, and it comes out nice and crispy in about a half hour, and we cut it up into slices, and then like you guys were talking about, you can add your own toppings or lettuce, and it's great for leftovers because it, you can pull it out of the fridge and eat it cold or warm it up again. It's just a good meal for the kids to get involved in making. And it's a good thing to enjoy for a crowd, too. So I've made it for parties. And
fantastic.
Krista,
it's thanks.
It's on Pinterest. You can see it on Pinterest all over, but it's a good thing to make.
Krista, thanks a lot for sharing that with us. Yeah, I do something like that. My version of chilaquiles is very inauthentic, no matter how you want to define the word. Aaron, anything like that, like a quick oven? Yeah, it's basically a casserole, a quick assembly casserole. Anything that that you think of in that category?
First of all, I am hungry after hearing that.
Well, it's Food Friday. I'm always, my mouth's watering.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah.
You know, sheet pan, I just say if you have a sheet pan, you've got a plan. It is just one of the most amazing, versatile tools. I love anything that minimizes my cleanup because even though I love to cook, I despise doing dishes, as I suspect do most of us. So whatever, I'll do something where whatever vegetables I have left in my fridge at the end of the week, you know, maybe half a head of broccoli here, red bell pepper there. I'll chop it up, add some salt, pepper, you know, and then whatever seasoning I'm in the mood for that night. You can do a version with, you can add Italian seasoning. You can add chili and cumin. Yeah. If you want to go that Southwest route, get the vegetables started. And then at the end, we'll throw on shrimp. We'll throw on boneless, skinless chicken breasts. And then everything finishes cooking together on that same pan. And if you go to my website, wellplated.com, I have a category called One Pan Meals, and I have dozens of sheet pan recipes in there. I just love them. I love them.
Thanks again for that suggestion, Krista. It's Food Friday. Erin Clark is with us from wellplated.com, author of the Well Plated Cookbook. She's helping us develop some go-to meals for after school because school is coming back soon. We'll go back to your calls in just a moment. But Erin, I wanted to ask about a third recipe you shared with us at WPR.org/Food Friday. You call it homemade hamburger helper. I'll call it that too. To market it in your own household, I understand you had to come up with another name.
Yes, I did, because my husband, and I have to say, I had a little bit of baggage from hamburger helper myself. I think I called it like creamy beef and noodles. I think we all have this idea of, or at least I did, this idea of hamburger helper as something that was kind of a last resort. You know, you probably don't have the most like nutritious attitude towards it, and for good reason. But there is just something so comforting about noodles and a creamy sauce with ground beef. I came up with a way to make it from scratch that is just in one pot. So you have your sauce, cook your ground meat, and then you add the noodles and liquids straight to the same pan. And not only does that save you from having to boil a separate pot for pasta, but also because the noodles cook in the sauce, they release starches, and that makes the sauce really rich and silky. I also add, I know hamburger helper sounds, this is going to sound like the funniest adjective ever to use in a sentence with it, but I'm telling you, this hamburger helper truly tastes gourmet, if there can be such a thing. I add a little smoked paprika, a little bit of hot sauce, and a little bit of Dijon mustard, and it just elevates the flavor. I love this dish because it touches on the nostalgia of my childhood, but it is a meal that I genuinely enjoy. All my friends enjoy it. I've made it for my nieces multiple times. It's easy on cleanup, and it's good for you too.
Find that at WPR.org/Food Friday, along with a couple other recipes from Aaron. Back to your calls now. Liz is with us in Menominee Falls. Hi, Liz.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. I would love other ideas for vegetarian meals. One of my kids has really become pretty much primarily vegetarian. Whether it's slow cooker or in the oven, what other ideas do you have that's vegetarian?
Liz, thanks for that call. Aaron, that egg roll bowl, you can make that vegetarian. You had thoughts, I think.
Absolutely. You can. I don't know how your kids feel about tofu. I always say that with a little hesitation because I think that people have really fixated idea of what tofu is, with what tofu is being gross or bland or mushy. And you know what? Tofu can taste gross or bland or mushy, but it can also be absolutely fantastic. When you crumble it and saute it, it gets a little crispy and it is almost symbolic of like meat crumbles. There's another plant-based protein called tempeh that also really can taste a lot like meat. It's just, think of it as a blank canvas and you can season it any way you want. One of my favorites is I do kind of a copycat P.F. Chang's lettuce wrap that is in my cookbook, where you saute tofu with mushrooms and this really rich hoisin sauce. It's so satisfying. And I've served it to multiple friends and nobody ever thinks that it's tofu. Some other great dishes that are vegetarian, you can't go wrong with different noodle stir fries. Again, you can add tofu if you want to add some protein. I love doing casseroles where, if you think of a classic chicken and rice casserole, a way that you can kind of remake that is instead to do quinoa, because that is higher in protein. Add some veggies like sauteed broccoli or carrots, whatever your family likes. And then I like to toss a can of white beans in with that. Beans are a fantastic source of protein. You still get that cheesy, hearty, comforting casserole feeling without the meat. And I'm a big proponent that, yes, like, meat is delicious, but it does not have to be the star of the show. And you can absolutely have a satisfying meal that doesn't involve meat. So I would just encourage, say, think about those white beans in your casserole. Think about different things that you can do with soups and vegetarian chilies. And then there's a lot of great vegan stir fry options out there too.
Liz, thanks for that call. And Aaron, that's all the time we have. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That's Aaron Clark, creator of the recipe website, wellplated.com, author of the book, The Well-Plated Cookbook, Fast, Healthy Recipes You'll Want to Eat. Aaron helped us get going on our back to school cooking with some easy, tasty meals. Find recipes from Aaron at WPR.org/Food Friday.